This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
The Parshas Pinchas, a very long sedra and full of interesting things. Perhaps the starting point is at the very beginning of the parsha, and a question we've addressed in the past, and I just want to revisit with a different angle, and that is, if you or I were breaking up the parshas, I don't think either of us would break it up in the way that it is broken up, i.e. the beginning of the story that the Bnei Smoav are enticing some of the Bnei Yisrael to do an Aveira actually takes place in last week's parasha, the end of Parashas Balak. And in fact, Pinchas does his act of zealotry in last week's parasha. And at the beginning of this week's parasha, he receives the Nobel Peace Prize. He gets the Bris Shalom. Why the gap? Why isn't the whole story in Parashas Pinchas? It's a very strange thing when you take note of it. That's, if you take a look at the sheet, the end of Parashas Balak, Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim, Vayochel Om Liznesis Bnei Smoav, Vayar Pinchas Ben Elozo, etc. Vayochel Metecho Eidah, Vayikach Rinuch Piyodah, Vayifesh Shneim, etc. That's the end of Parashas Balak. We daven Musuf, we go home, we make Kiddush, end of. Next week we're back in Shul. The Pasuk says, Vayidabah Shem Amosh Shalema, Pinchas Ben Elozo, Ben Aram HaKoyim, Heishev Es Chamosim, Yal Bnei Yisrael, etc., etc. Hinni Nesin Es Bris Yisholem. Why the gap? So an answer perhaps is this. When someone does an act of zealotry, he behaves in a zealous way, it's not always clear what the motives are and what the long-term consequences of that act is. The motives could be because the person is angry, he's drawn to violence, or perhaps he's acting l'shem shamayim, and this is a positive type of kinah. But when you judge that, you actually have to take a step back and view it with a bit of a sort of a dispassionate objectivity. And that's what that 1 week represents. Waiting a week, splitting the parasha between the act and the reward, reminds us that we have to judge, we have to take a step back to see what the motive was. And more importantly, to see what the long-term consequences of such actions are. Because a person who acts has to realize that it may be an impulsive act, but everything one does has long-term consequences. In the 1970s, the Chinese leader Zhou Enlai was asked about what he thought about the French Revolution in 1789. And he famously responded, "Too soon to say." 200 years later. Now, some say that actually he was questioned about the student revolts in the 1960s, but either way, it was many years later. But that's the point. When there are certain incidents, they have long-term consequences, and therefore we always take the long view. And as ever, Chazal have coined it in just a few words. The Gemara in Tomid, Daf Lamed Beis Omed Aleph, says, "Ezehu chacham haroye es hanoilot." The wise man sees the long-term consequences of his actions. And indeed, there are many examples of this. But just to give you one example, we're in the 3 weeks, and we, of course, will revisit the sugya of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, the Gemara in Hanizokin and Gittin. And in that Gemara, a bit later on, we have the famous episode where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is sort of smuggled out of Yerushalayim, and he encounters Vespasian. And he manages to make a request. And his request is famously, "Ten li Yavne v'chachomeha," to grant me Yavne, the seat of the Sanhedrin, and the Chachomim. And that, although at the time it seemed strange, why didn't you ask for bigger things? As the Gemara says, why didn't you ask for that the Romans should leave off Yerushalayim, don't destroy the Beis HaMikdash? But for whatever reason, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understood that the long-term spiritual survival of the Jewish people very much depended on Yavne v'chachomeha. He saw the long-term consequences of his actions. Often, I have the good fortune of teaching in high school and engaging with students who are at a very formative stage of their life, 16, 17, 18 years old, before they go off to yeshiva in the boys' school and seminary in the girls' school. And sometimes I'm talking to students who are not always as motivated as they should be. And I sit down with them and I've done this many times. I will talk to, a fictitious Yossi, age 16. And I will say to Yossi, age 16, tell me, Yossi, describe to me Yossi, age 26. And he will look at me puzzled. And I probe and push him. And I say, what are you up to in life? Are you married? Are you working? Where are you living? And I then push further and I say, describe to me Yossi, age 36. And I probe for details. And of course, little Yossi, age 16, like most teenagers, haven't thought beyond what they're having for supper tonight, if at all. And therefore, it's important to suddenly reframe their perspective that, you know, the longer term, what they're doing now has longer term consequences way down the line, very significant ones. I often tell them what my father told me and my siblings as kids, what you will be tomorrow, you are now becoming. What you will be tomorrow, you're now becoming. It's a very important line. If a person wants to be that amazing husband, that amazing wife, that amazing member of Klal Yisrael, a Talmud Chacham, whatever a person's aspirations are, don't just wake up one morning and are that person. One has to aspire to it. And one has to act now in a way that, please God, down the line, one works towards that. That's the point. What you will be when you're older, you are now becoming. And that perhaps is one of the messages from this week's parasha. That is why the split between parashas Balak, where the action takes place, and the priest prize that takes place at the beginning of this week's parasha, the reason perhaps is to teach us that a person has got to consider the long-term effects of his actions. And before we judge, we have to consider very carefully the motives of the person in question. Okay, let's move on. Later in the parasha in Perek Chavov, we have, of course, the second census in Sefer Bamidbar. The first happened way at the beginning, and now, 40 years later, we have a second census. The pasuk says, "Vayachre amagefo, vayoyma Hashem and Moshe v'elozo ben Aaron ha-Kohen neimer su'u es roish kol adas bnei Yisrael." It's the first box in paragraph 2. If you're listening online, please do email me at j.golker@gmail.com and I'll send you the handout. Says Rashi, why are you counting the bnei Yisrael now? Moshal Leroya, it's a moshal for a shepherd. Shenichnasu ze'evim l'soich edra, that the wolves entered his flock. V'horgu bohen, and killed many sheep. It's after a magefa. We need to know how many are left over, how many have been has succumbed to this magefa. That's the first explanation of Rashi. Dova Acher says Rashi, because she'yotzu me'mitzrayim, when they left Mitzrayim, v'nimtzru l'moshe, and the people were handed to Moshe Rabbeinu, they were told a number. Now it's towards the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. He has to return the flock to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He has to do an accounting. That's the two pshatim in Rashi. Now, I want to share with you just an interesting Chofetz Chaim ala Torah. The Chofetz Chaim makes a very interesting observation. We know that already from Sefer Bereishis, that Binyamin, one of the sons of Yaakov Avinu, was blessed with 10 sons. The sons have unusual names. One of the most poignant rushes in the whole Torah, that towards the end of Sefer Bereishis, when Yosef, he was with his brothers, they don't realize it's Yosef. They think it's the viceroy of Egypt. They're sitting down together, eating, and he places the sons of one mother on one side and the other mother, etc. And he says to Binyamin, You haven't got any brothers. I haven't got any brothers. Let's sit together. Of course, they're the sons of the same mother. And they engage in conversation. And Yosef asks Binyamin, do you have any children? And he says, yes. And he says, what are their names? And he lists their names. And Rashi goes through each one, that each one is named after his brother Yosef for an event that happened in his life. Ard, he went down. Ered, he went down to Mitzrayim. Mupim and Chupim, that I didn't see his Chupa, etc., etc. And Yosef is so taken by that, he becomes so emotional, he has to leave the room. One of the most poignant Rashi, my father could, whenever he would say over the Rashi, he couldn't hold himself back from crying. A beautiful Rashi. So Binyamin had 10 sons. In contrast, Don, another of the sons of Yaakov Avinu, has one son, Chush. And that son is deaf. Famous Gemara in Sota that we've spoken about in the past, with regard to the Levi, the burial of Yaakov Avinu. But a notable point, says the Chofetz Chaim, is take a look at this week's parsha. When you see the descendants, generations later, of Binyamin and Don, something's very interesting. It says Pasuk Mem Aleph in Perek Chavov, Eile b'nei Binyamin, b'mishpachosom, ufkudehem, chamisha v'aboim elef, v'sheish meyos, 45,600. Next, the Posuk Mem Beis. Eile b'nei Don. What about the sons of Don? Above the Shishim Elef, 64,400. 64,400. So, interesting. That's, it's 45,600 when it comes to Binyamin. And 64,000, nearly 20,000 times more. How interesting. From one son, Hushim ben Don, you suddenly get 64,000. And from 10 sons, you get 45,000. Interesting, because imagine you were sitting at the table of Yaakov Avinu, the Shabbos table, and he's sitting there with his sons and grandchildren. And Binyamin is sitting there with 10 sons, engaged, no doubt, in lively Torah discussion. And Don is there as well with his son Hushim, who is hard of hearing. And you would have thought, perhaps, you know, fast forward a few generations, that the descendants of Binyamin and his 10 sons were going to be, you know, many times more than that of Don and his descendants. But yet it's not like that. Don has 64,000 and Binyamin 45,000, says the Chofetz Chaim, bottom box on page one. Kan gil salam ha-Torah, ke'in chochma ve'in eitzel neged Hashem. We don't know the ways of Hashem. Le Binyamin hoyu asor abonim, ve'le Don rak ben echot, Hushim ben Don, ben yochid hazeh hoyu chorech, this Hushim was hard of hearing. And yet he was more, had many more descendants than that of Binyamin. Mikan Yeshuma, says the Chofetz Chaim, Shemi Shashem Chofetz Bo Yuchel Atzlicha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make anyone succeed. It's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ben Echod Yosef Misha Yesh La'asar Bonim. From one child more than someone who has 10 children. V'chein Hadin Im Nechosim Yesh La'choni Matzliach V'someach B'chelkoi. So too, it's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can have one Oni who is more successful in whatever it may be. The Somech Bechelkon is very happy with and content with his lot. Or Lehepech Yesh Oshir. And conversely, you can have a wealthy person. She'ina Matzliach Kol Kach. He's not, successful in other aspects. But Yisek Kulam Hashem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. So you just never know. You never know. You can look at a situation, how that will unfold in years to come is a mystery, is hidden. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, but you just never know. So an interesting observation of the Chofetz Chaim. Let's turn now to Perek Chaf Zayin. And of course, as Moshe Rabbeinu, as we've said, is coming towards the end of his life, he has to appoint a new leader. We're dealing with a succession of Moshe Rabbeinu. And I want to share with you, and this will be the remainder of the shir, some fascinating insights that I've come across. The Pasuk says in Perek Chaf Zayin, in Psukim Yudches through Tuchof, Vayoyim Hashem Moshe, Kach Lecho Es Yeshua Ben Nun, you appoint Yeshua Ben Nun, Ish Asher Ruach Boy, who has a spirit, V'somachto Es Yodcho Olov, you rest your hands on him, give him smicha, V'nosato Mehoitcho Olov, and give him of your greatness, L'man Yishmu Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. Says the Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Ayin Hei Omed Alav, V'nosato Mehoitcho Olov, you give of your hoid, your glory, to Yeshua, Mehoitcho, says the Gemara, says the Pasuk, says the Gemara, V'lo kol hoitcho, some but not all. Says the Gemara, Zekeinim Sheba'isa Hadar, the elders in that generation, Omru, they said, Pnei Moshe Pnei Chama, the face of Moshe Rabbeinu was like the face of the sun, Pnei Yeshua, and the face of Yeshua, his Talmud, is Kepnei Levona, is like the face of the moon. Oila la'isa busha, oila la'isa kima. How embarrassing, what busha wachlima, that there's been such a change from the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu to the next leader, to Yeshua. Now, the Imre Emes, just by the way, and some say in the name of the Vilna God, questions, why is it Zakenim Shabadar? Why is this observation made by the elders? Didn't the younger ones in the generation also see the marked difference between the stature of Moshe Rabbeinu and that of Yeshua? Says the Imre Emes, and like I say, others say it in the name of the Vilna Gaon, an amazing insight. Shem oid zochres Moshe b'tzir also. Because the elders, they remembered Moshe Rabbeinu when he was still a youngster. The gam oz zor upon of k'plechama yoyis mishel Yeshua. And they remembered what Moshe Rabbeinu was like as a youngster. And they knew even then he had p'nechama, he was like the sun. His stature was just, was surpassed anyone. The youngsters may have thought, you know, maybe when Moshe Rabbeinu was young, he also was similar to Yeshua now. And when Yeshua matures and becomes more senior and let the years pass, he would also achieve the heights that Moshe Rabbeinu achieves. So the youngsters could make that mistake. But the Zakenim would not make that mistake because they realized who they knew Moshe Rabbeinu as a youngster. Now, the clear interpretation of the Gemara, according to many Rishonim, the Rashbam, Rabbi Lugashim, on that Gemara in Bambasra, is to contrast the lofty stature of Moshe Rabbeinu and the lesser stature of Yeshua. Says the Rashbam, Shebizman Muad Nismayet HaKovod Kolkach, in a short time, from one generation to the next, the Kovod has gone lower, Shari Yeshua HaYonovi Melech K'moshe, yet, they couldn't reach the lofty levels of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Rabbeinu Gershon says, Shenigra Yeshua HaMoshe, there was a devaluation, if you like, in status. So it's seen in a negative way. And indeed, Rav Shlomo Hyman, the great Rosh Shiva of the 20th century, he agrees, if you like, with that Mahalach. What does he say? He says something fascinating. Take a look at the box number 3b. In Sofik, the youngsters also would have realized that Yeshua was not as great as Moshe. That the Rebbe is greater than the Talmidim. That's life. That's the reality. But yet, they would have realized that maybe, yes, Moshe is greater than Yeshua. They're of the same type. Rav Shlomo Hyman is addressing the following problem. Why the sun and the moon? Why is Moshe compared to the light of the sun and Yeshua compared to the light of the moon? What are Chazal telling us? Says Rav Shlomo Hyman an interesting thing. The youngsters might have thought that, yes, Moshe is greater, but Yeshua is in the ballpark. He's the same type of stature, the same min, the same type. It's just that Moshe is a bit greater. Ulam Hazakenim, the elders, Sherau es Moshe, who saw Moshe Rabbeinu grow up, Yodu Shahevdo Benem, who Shemoshe Yeshua Klal Lohoima Esasuk. They weren't comparable at all. Ela Ple Moshe Ple Chama Ple Yeshua Ple Levona. The Moshe Rabbeinu was like the sun and Yeshua like the moon. Hashemesh Valvona Him Shne Sugim. The sun and the moon are two different entities. Shne Sugim Nifrodim Shaloris, two different entities of light. If you take the light of 10 moons, it's not going to give you the same light that one sun will provide. You've got 10 moons in the middle of the night. That's not going to illuminate the whole world like a sun does. So therefore, the Chazal is saying, we make reference to the sun and the moon to sort of indicate that Moshe and Yeshua, as great as they both were, but they were two different entities. They were two different minyan. They were a different ballpark. Moshe Rabbeinu was like a son, and Yeshua was a different entity. He was great, of course. We can't fathom his greatness. But compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, he wasn't just a smaller son. He was a different entity altogether. That's the reference to the sun and the moon. The Chidah, however, when he looks at this Gemara, he turns it on its head. And he says, actually, this is a praise for Yeshua. How so? Let's take a look at the Chidah. Very interesting Chidah. Of course, Chaim Yosef David Azulai. Okay, let's take a look at paragraph 3c. Mashar so Yeshua ben Nun, Na'ar la Yomash Mitoicho Eihel. Yeshua ben Nun is referred to as a Na'ar who didn't move from the Eihel, which is back in Sefer Shemos. Omru Chazal, Shehaya Yeshua Mesades Ashuchonet Vasafsalim Bebeis Midrash Hashem Moshe. Famous Chazal. What does it mean that Na'ar lo Yomash Mitoicho Eihel? That Yeshua was responsible for organizing the benches and the chairs and the tables in the Beis Medrash. Lochein, Kashe Nismane Yeshua Nidei Moshe Rabbeinu, when Moshe Rabbeinu appointed Yeshua, Sovru Ziknei Hador, Ke'en Yeshua Oile Aleim Bemadrigosoi, El Arak Zuchus Hashimu Shashimu 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 Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't merit it by himself. It's just that he had a particular Zuchus, that he was the one who tied up the Beis Medrash. Ram, however, when they saw the face of Yeshua, Shev Hikuk Pnei Levona, that glowed like the moon, that he had achieved through his shimush, through his working in the Beis Medrash, he had achieved a very lofty level, greater than theirs. That's why he merited to become the leader. But those that did not clean up the base medrash and work in this menial, seemingly menial way, it was below them. They were embarrassed to be the ones to sweep the floors and clean up the base medrash. They did not merit to this lofty level. Al Kain Omru, that's why the Gemara says, they said, woe for that busha, woe for that chlima. What does that mean? Because of the embarrassment, because of the embarrassment that Yeshua endured, he was the one who did the menial tasks of sweeping and cleaning the base of Medrash. They lost out on this very lofty level. An amazing thing, really. And that's really how Yeshua merited to be the leader, because he engaged in the menial tasks which others thought perhaps were beneath them. I just finished reading the biography of Rabbi David Trenk. Maybe some of you have read it. It's a fantastic biography of this exceptional Rebbe who was, you know, as a machanech for over 50 years, an absolutely larger-than-life personality, and many, many anecdotes of note. But one thing which I think relates to this chidah is that a very big feature of his life and life generally in America is, of course, the long summer camps. And Rabbi Trenk was a veteran of Camp Munk, a well-known camp in America. And, you know, the book makes reference to the fact that he would get up very early in the morning. That was his way. And it would not be beneath him, even though he was a man of tremendous Talmud Chacham. But it would not be beneath him that he would do it on a regular basis. He would sweep the base of Medrash. And in his final weeks on this world, when he would give instructions to those who were sort of, you know, who were going to continue his legacy, he told them to make sure someone sweeps the base of Medrash. And he would get up at 4:30 or so in the morning. At 5 o'clock, the delivery of the bread came. He was worried that the fellow who delivered the bread, he would just take off the baskets and full of loaves of bread and just leave them there. And who knows what wild animals would come along, and who knows what would be left a few hours later when everyone else would surface. But he took upon himself every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning to take the trays of bread and bring them inside the building. And it wasn't beneath him to do that. And I have the privilege of teaching in the Beis HaMedrash every morning. And my esteemed colleague, Rabbi Shua Hartman, he, although a tremendous Talmud Chacham and a Mechaber of, well over 30 Sfarim, you know, one of the world's experts on the Maharal, he doesn't see it beneath himself to go buy the bagels and to order that and to deal with some of even the most menial of jobs. I often joke with him. I said to him, you know, Rabbi Shua, was this in your job description? And yet he doesn't see it as beneath him to do these things. And that's the praise for Yeshua of old, and I think the praise of Yeshua of now as well. That says the chidah is the explanation of why they said, "Oilonu la'isa busha, woe to us for that embarrassment, oilon la'isa chlima," because they're making reference to the fact that when they saw that he embarrassed, humiliated himself to do those menial tasks, that was the source of his greatness. Now, why the tidying of the Beis HaMedrash? Why does that show leadership? I can understand it's tremendous middus, and it makes a person into a better giving person, etc., etc. But why is that a reason to appoint him as the leader after Moshe Rabbeinu? Well, what is the connection between tidying the Beis HaMedrash and leadership? So there's an interesting Talmud Vadas, that's from Moshe Sternbuch, makes a very interesting insight. Issa b'Medrash, that's the bottom box on the page. The Medrash says, Shezocha Yeshua b'schar shimushay, he cleaned up the Beis HaMedrash, and that's why he became the leader. V'nira habiyo bazeh. The explanation, says Rav Moshe Sternbuch, is perhaps this. Because he served Talmidei Chachamim, those who were in the Beis HaMedrash, whether they were more junior, more senior, younger, older, didn't make a difference. He didn't only help those who were great, which is a temptation sometimes, and to overlook those who were junior, younger. And that demonstrated that the motive for it came from a good source. I'm doing this l'shem shemayim. I want to elevate and show my love for Torah, so I don't care who's learning Torah. I'm going to clean up the benches of the young and the old. I don't care who sat where. V'chol ha'isik b'Torah ka'odin hulay, v'mutzla lov l'shamshay, v'zocha b'zeh l'yos m'moysra ha'Torah m'matik ha'shmul ha'avin ha'doros ha'chrinim ma'shelomah b'moysha. That's why he was the worthy conduit of the transmission process. Just like a bench, safsalim, he tied up the base of Medrash. He made no differentiation between cotton and godel. He tied up the whole base of Medrash. He didn't just serve those who were great, but he did it l'shem shemaim through his pure avas ha'Torah and pure motives. And that is a sign of good leadership. Leadership means I have to take care not just of the wealthy, of the great, of the noble, or the elite. I have to take care of the whole nation, all peoples at all stations of life. And that is a demonstration of the leadership. And therefore, he was zocher to be the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. So there we have three ideas in this week's Parsha Share. The first idea is that strange split, that the storyline of Pinchas committing his act of kinnah takes place really in last week's Parsha, yet the Bris Hashanah is awarded in this week's Parsha. And perhaps the idea is twofold. Number one, when you look back and you judge an act of kinnah, you have to explore and just sort of take a step back and think, what were the motives? And therefore the week's break indicates that sort of that slow sort of taking a step back and querying the motives, were they done l'shem shemaim or not? And of course, with Pinchas, they were. And more, that when a person does something, they have long-term consequences. What were the long-term effects of this act? Were they positive or not? And only then, when you consider the long-term consequences, then can you give a bris shalom. Then we saw the amazing insights of the Chofetz Chaim, how from one son who was a chayrish, was hard of hearing, came 64,000 descendants, and yet from the 10 sons of Binyamin came 45,000. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and that slacha that a person can have in life is really up to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the appointment of Yeshua, this interesting Gemara, the Gemara in Bambasra says that after Yeshua was appointed, that the Zakenim in that generation said, Oy lanu, the plain Moshe is kaplei cham, and plain Yeshua is kaplei levona. But Moshe is like the appearance of the sun, and Yeshua is like that of the moon. Why is it the Zakenim? Because the Zakenim knew Moshe from a young age, and they knew that even then, at a young age, when he was sort of comparable to Yeshua now, he was in a different league. The youngsters may have thought that maybe Yeshua will develop into what Moshe is now. That's why it's Dafka the Zakenim, and understood by most, Rashbam Ben Geshem, etc., as a sort of a kapshute, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a stature which way surpassed anybody else. And Rav Shlomo Hyman says exactly that. That's why he compares to the sun and the moon. It wasn't just that Yeshua was a different, was a sort of a smaller sun, not quite as great. No, he was a totally sug ache. He was a different entity altogether. And that's why we compare him to the sun and the moon. The Chidah, on the other hand, sees in this Gemara as a praise for Yeshua. It's dafka through his rolling his sleeves up and involving himself in menial tasks, which actually was the source of his greatness and why he became a leader. And that's what as Chazal say, that he was a na'ar lo yomush mitoicha ehel, that he would clean up the Beis HaMedrash. And lastly, we saw the Tam Vadas, of Moshe Steinbuch says, that tidying the Beis HaMedrash actually demonstrates leadership. Because just like when you tidy the Beis HaMedrash, you don't differentiate between this shtender and that shtender, you tidy the whole Beis HaMedrash. I'm not differentiating between cotton and godel. Also, too, good leadership. Good leadership, you don't differentiate, you address the needs of the entire nation, the entire people. And that's exactly what Yeshua demonstrated and merited, therefore, to become the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. Thank you for listening. I wish you all a very good Shabbos. Kol Tov.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.